From the Centre for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Natasha Moore.
And I'm Simon Smart.
It's one of life's biggest questions, one that humans have been pondering since ancient times. The question, where did we come from? And it seems natural to go from there to questions like, why are we here? Where are we headed? Philosophers and scientists have offered answers, and so has religion. And their answers have often been seen as incompatible and fiercely contested.
These differences are often highlighted in the classic science versus religion debate, and they often pit evolution against intelligent design, for example. But people who know the history and the science will tell you, as people in the know about things so often do, that it's more complicated than that.
Many scientists find that science points beyond itself, and a lot of them end up studying theology because theology seems to provide answers that science really doesn't. So science is exciting, it's great in itself, but often you just feel that you want to go further and understand more about the personal world, and science is only part of that story.
Dr. Graham Finlay is a cancer researcher at the University of Auckland. He's also the author of a book on evolution, and he's completed a theology degree.
It's not your typical CV for a scientist, and this is where we started our conversation with Graham. He joined us for a chat when he was in Sydney to present a series of lectures for ISCAST, which is a group of Christians in science and technology.
Graham, you probably live in a frustrated way with that science versus God type of debate that's still around. How have you resolved that tension for yourself in your own life?
Well, the bottom line is that science and, if you want to use the word religion, ask different sorts of questions. I mean, science asks the questions about how physical things work, but religion, if you like, asks the questions of why am I here and why do things exist as they do?
There are plenty of scientists who would say those sorts of questions are things that science can eventually solve. But you'd want to probably challenge that, I imagine.
Yes, I would, because science can't really look at the personal aspects of our lives. I mean, it studies our brain states, but not us as persons. And surely we know the world only through our personhood. Obviously, it's anchored in our brains, but it transcends our brains. That's where all the really interesting issues lie.
So are there still areas of discomfort or tension for you between your faith and your science?
I don't think so. I think there are many areas of ignorance. And being a scientist, one learns to accept that because you're always working at the interface of what's known and what's not known. And I think that's quite compatible with theology because there's a lot of things as a Christian I don't understand about the big questions. But that's my ignorance. It's not because that there are any inherent contradictions between the physical world which we get our hands on and the spiritual or personal world which really transcends us but we're a part of.
And what about the opposite? Are there ways that your science affirms your faith?
Well, it's compatible with my faith, certainly, because we live in an ordered universe which speaks to me of an ordered mind behind it. But I think there are mistakes in trying to go from science to God. To me, the other way is the truth, that historically, people of faith, people who believed in a God of faithfulness and rationality and goodness, became involved in early science. And so you went from God to science, not the other way.
Now, Graham, you're totally convinced of the evidence for evolution. What about your particular field has helped you to come to that conclusion? You know, there's obviously broader question as well, but what about in your area especially that's right. Sort of spoken to that?
Right. Well, I've written a book about human evolution, and I'm absolutely not an evolutionary biologist. I'm a cancer cell biologist. But what drove me into this whole area was the understanding that the mutations which originate in cancer cells and which drive cancer evolution are precisely the same as those which originate in organisms and which drive the evolution of species. So the genetic logic is exactly the same.
What does it mean when we speak of evolution as a theory? That word theory has quite a few different meanings.
Right, it does. And it means different things to lay people from what it means to science. To a lay person, it might mean a rather loose speculation.
Kind of a guess.
Yes, it's a guess. It's a bright idea. But to a scientist, a theory is a whole organized body of knowledge which provides a theoretical base for understanding what's gone before and for doing experiments which approach what is as yet unknown. So the theory of evolution is a whole body of information that comprises a paradigm of thought.
Are there any serious challenges to that framework from a purely secular perspective? Or is this kind of an orthodoxy you're not allowed to question anymore?
Well, again, I can only speak as a cell biologist. I don't want to put down my colleagues in paleontology, of course, and other subjects like that who've done a fantastic job. But the developing science of comparative genomics, where people are sequencing genomes from human beings and multiple other species, is in fact producing dramatic and very consistent evidence for human evolution. It's forming a very comprehensive and coherent picture.
How does your Christian faith then inform your understanding of evolution?
I think of an atheistic scientist called Jacques Monod, who said a generation or two back that evolution runs on chance and necessity. And Christians look upon that as the way we can describe the constitution of our universe. There's freedom, that's chance, and necessity, which is lawfulness or consistency. And as a Christian, I can see that chance as the gift of God, of freedom to his creation. We live in a free universe, and yet the necessity is the laws, the fruitfulness which God has implanted in his creation, which allows marvelous, complex living systems to develop. To me, it's a source of worship, although it wasn't to Jacques Monod. I think he missed out because he didn't have that extra faith.
Yeah, they're very different looking universes that you're describing there, even though those, like the science might correspond to the idea of chance and the idea of freedom.
Yes.
You're going to approach that universe very differently.
Indeed, indeed. The Christian and the atheist does their science together side by side, and it's the same language exactly. But the Christian does have that other perspective, that there is a great mind behind this. In fact, a mind which has revealed itself, I believe, through Jesus of Nazareth. And in that, I find a wonderful new window into the personal aspects. We live in a wonderfully personal universe as well. It's not just quarks and photons.
You're listening to Life and Faith. If you've just joined us, we're talking about evolution with Dr. Graham Finlay, and how evolution may point more towards a creator than we might think.
Now, I want to ask you about intelligent design theory. This is a view that's held by some Christians. You're not a fan of it. Is it just the idea that there's a designer behind the evolutionary process, or what's the problem? What issues do you have with it?
To me, there are a number of issues with intelligent design which I don't feel comfortable with either as a scientist or as a Christian. I think one of the scientific problems is that when they find areas of ignorance, God tends to be put into that as an explanation, such as the formation of the complement system, which drives inflammation, or the formation of the clotting system, which are very complicated systems. And the ID people say these couldn't have evolved spontaneously. But then that's actually shutting the door for research. It's saying our ignorance is inherent in the system. We're going to remain ignorant. Let's go home. Let's shut the door of the lab.
And just say, well, that God did that bit and we don't know how.
That's right. That's my problem with ID scientifically, or one of them. From a theological point of view, though, ID leaves me cold, because what sort of a designer is it? Is it a mouse? Is it a spaceman? Is it an alien? It's not necessarily the God of Jesus Christ, who is all-powerful and all-good and loving, who has revealed himself in human history. So it's got nothing really to add at all, to my mind, to Christian theology. The other thing is, I'm not really interested in design after all. The biblical emphasis, again, I speak as a Christian, is on purpose. And as I look at evolution and history, I see that there is purpose embedded in these different histories.
Well, I want to ask you a question we are often asked about evolution, and that is, if the world is, in the Christian view, a good creation, why then is this process so reliant upon death and failure and competition and decay? How do you match those two things up?
Right. I think one approach to that is simply to say that we are physical beings. to me as a scientist, death is an inherent part of creation. So it's animal death has always been there, and theologians don't really doubt that that is the case. But what we can say is that God shares in the suffering and pain of creation. He is not a distant, like the Greek gods, unmoved, impassive, uncaring spectator. But he himself shares in our suffering and in the sufferings of his creatures. And according to Christian theology, he is absolutely committed to one day removing or extirpating the suffering and the death from his creation.
But Graham, you mentioned that death is always part of the creative process.
Yes.
And yet in the creation accounts in the Bible, death comes as a result of the fall. Seems like it's introduced there and it's kind of not a good thing that's happened. How do you marry those two things together?
Okay, so the fall is our way of describing a story in the Bible where human beings rebelled against God and relationships with each other and with the world were broken down. Where the Bible speaks about death in that context, it's speaking about a spiritual death before God. So it's not talking about physical death. It's talking about death which is separation, because the ancient Jews had a very holistic idea of life and death, that life was lived in relationship and only full life existed in relationship. But when that relationship was broken, and we see it all around us through human selfishness and evil, then in a sense we enter into death, which is not physical death, but the breaking of life-giving relationships which make us truly human.
Graham, you spoke earlier, you said a bit about the parallel between the process of human evolution and the development we see in cancer tumours. What do you do with the conclusion then that God, if he's responsible for one, he's responsible for the other,
right,
for the cancer?
Right. Indeed, God is responsible for the marvel of creation, and he must be responsible for the suffering of cancer. But when we look at other systems, we see the same thing. The glory of evolution, of course, is the human mind. And human beings are capable of such wonderful acts of goodness and kindness and compassion and art. And yet we are also capable of the utmost acts of degradation and selfishness and brutality and cruelty. So we can only say of this that in a creation which is given freedom, yes, the good arises, and this is God's purpose. Evil also arises with it, and this breaks God's heart. And God is committed to address that evil and to remove it or extirpate it from his creation. And this is where the Christian concept of the incarnation, God becoming a human being to die, the eternal dying, in order that he may change creation in such a way that the violence and the ugliness and the cruelty and the suffering, whether it's genetic or personal, might one day be removed.
So as someone who has faith in science and faith in God, what do you think science has to offer in alleviating suffering?
As a Christian, I see science as a gift of God. So it's one of our means of serving God by trying to remove human suffering. So, for example, in my own work, I've worked for years trying to develop anti-cancer drugs. And of recent times, a whole new paradigm of drugs has come to be, which are more specific than the old poisons. They specifically target cancer cells. There are wonderful developments. A lot needs to be done, and new problems are surfacing. But there is a hope that science, in various ways, will be able to alleviate human suffering and therefore effectively act as a servant to the purposes of God.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity with Natasha Moore and Simon Smart. We hope this episode has given you some things to chew over in relation to science, faith, and evolution.
If you've enjoyed our chat with Dr. Graham Finlay, let us know by leaving a rating or review on iTunes. Just type Centre for Public Christianity in the search box to find us. We'd love to know what you think.
Next week, we leave the world of science and head into the world of fashion with Indonesia's first supermodel, Tracy Trinita. It was a great conversation. You won't want to miss it.